Good evening. My name is Ed McDonough. I'm superintendent of schools in the Wells and Dunkwood CSD. And I'd like to welcome you this evening and thank you for coming out and participating in our Internet Safety Night. A few months ago, I had an opportunity to have a conversation with Nancy Cotty, who was our health teacher at the high school. She has a curriculum where she addresses all of the sophomores, and it caught my attention that the activity actually that was going on with our young people on computers, and especially on things such as Facebook and MySpace. It was really an eye-opener for me, and I suspect it may be an eye-opener for many of you this evening as you hear what our featured speaker has to say this evening. So I thank Nancy and I thank the Adult Community Education Program for pulling this off this evening. I think it will be very informative. Before I introduce our speaker, I'd also like to introduce the panel, which will come up later. We have Sarah Johnson, who's an adult education instructor. Is she here now?
She's
still a Cindy Rue, similarly an adult ed instructor and owner of C. Rue Computing. Cheryl Oakes, who is our collaborative content coach for technology here in the district, formerly was the elementary school teacher. Bob Sprankle is going to be with us this evening, but he's ill. And Wayne Cronin, who is a detective with the Wells Police Department, is here as well. So Brad Russ, to my right, your left, is a retired Portsmouth Chief of Police. He's an author in the field of child protection. He is currently the Director of Training for Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, which I think is located in New Hampshire?
At UNH.
At UNH. So please welcome Brad Russ.
Thanks, everybody. I also want to start off by saying you have one of the best baseball tournaments anywhere. We have one of the baseball coaches for Stratton, New Hampshire, where I live, and we love to come up here every year to participate in that. Been involved with children's issues for many years. I started out as a patrolman, obviously, in Portsmouth, but spent most of my career in the detective division. Ran our juvenile division and then moved up through the ranks to run the entire thing. But most of my time in detectives was focused upon areas of child abuse, child exploitation, and I've also been a trainer nationally for a place called the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention for over 20 years, traveling the country. Last week I was in San Diego and Salt Lake City, just to give you some idea of how active we are in doing training around the country. I sat in a parking lot for 10 minutes finishing up a conference call with the Department of Justice, who just asked us to take on the development of a national database on suspects in these cases. This issue is growing, unfortunately, in leaps and bounds. We're getting asked all the time to expand what we're doing on a national level. When I retired 4 years ago from the police department, it was to take on this project here, the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. There's 46 of them around the country. They're federally funded, and there are over 1,500 affiliated law enforcement agencies. In your state, the Maine State Police are involved. Our principal partner is Lewiston Police Department, simply because they stepped up in 1998 and said, we want to partner with you. And at the time, that was when Portsmouth, New Hampshire got the grant to run what's called the Northern New England Task Force. So you have people affiliated with this effort here in Maine, and I just want to make you aware of that in case anything you'd like to do in the future can also happen through that as well. But I want to talk about a wide range of issues, and in the time involved here, I'm going to touch on a bunch of them, and then I figure, you know, you can ask questions and we can get into more specifics. I do want to illustrate some of the tactics offenders use, some of the ways they exploit children through this technology. I have to tell you, it has really created a challenge for us in law enforcement. It is a situation where offenders are spending tremendous amounts of time figuring out how they can evade detection by us. And they use this technology in a way to really capitalize on its ability to reach into every home really in the world. I mean, when you think about, or when I think about, how sex offenders used to have to approach children, it was much more risky. You know, when I was a juvenile detective working child abuse, you had to put yourself within the proximity of children somehow. You were a coach, or you were a Boy Scout leader, or you were somebody that, you know, we just arrested a school bus driver. I'm actually going to show you that case, where they have, you know, the opportunity to interact with kids on a regular basis. But when you do that, obviously people know who you are. They know your name, they know your face, they know where you live. And so if you cross that line, you always have to worry that those kids, or perhaps if you're approaching kids in a park, you know, somebody's going to get your license plate number, and things of that nature, that could be reported to us. Well, now the anonymity afforded to offenders through the internet has created a situation where they're much more active, they're much bolder, you know, because they know that all the child is going to know, or the parent is going to know, is a screen name. Well, anyone can create. I can have 20 screen names. You're not necessarily going to know who I am or where I live, and I can reach into your living room. And I have to tell you that a lot of people think that, well, if I put the computer in the living room and I monitor my child's activities, then that's a pretty good safeguard. I can tell you that's not the case. Many places around the country now are becoming wireless environments where, and I just heard an advertisement this morning, get a free laptop. Call us, and, you know, basically they're marketing other services as a way to get you to get this laptop. But, you know, when I first got a computer in my house, it was, you know, $3,000-$4,000. Now you can get a very powerful, high-speed desktop computer for $500 or $600. Comes with a printer and a flat-screen monitor. And virtually everyone is signing on for high-speed internet access. It comes as a package now with Comcast, Verizon, and others. And so for, you know, $30, $40 a month, you can have a network system in your home running 4 and 5 computers at once. And so you can take the laptop like this, and you don't have to be plugged into a cable. You can carry that thing anywhere in your house, or you can take your laptop somewhere else, and it'll automatically detect that you're in a wireless environment, and you can sign on. You can go to the library with it. You can go to Starbucks. You can go to a lot of places and get an internet connection that your parents never know about. And with cell phone technology evolving, now many kids are able to instant message one another, send email to one another, and do a lot of things on a phone that parents never imagined were possible. I'm going to show you what's happening with iPods. You can now have offenders reach out to you through PlayStation. There's a lot of ways that they're accessing children that you're not going to ever prevent by thinking that as long as you're looking over their shoulder, that's good enough. It's not. So I want to talk to you about some of the things you need to have in terms of conversations with your children as well. So there are a lot of things that kids are doing online that's pretty scary. I get reports every day. I just got one today of a case in New Hampshire where we arrested another juvenile who was downloading, accessing, and trading child pornography. So it's very available. There are over 280,000 commercial pornography websites in the world that anyone can access from a computer. So, and here's the reality of it. Everyone is online, or they're going to be online in the very near future. I don't think it's a solution to say, well, I'm not going to have a computer. A lot of people say that to me after these presentations. You know, I feel like the best thing I can do is just pull the plug. Well, they're going to get online somehow, some way, whether you're involved in it or not. There are many high schools across the country now that, you know, provide computers to their students on a regular basis that they can take home. I mean, I have them communicate with his teachers online. They get the notes from the classroom online. So you can't really, and there are a lot of benefits to the internet and computers as well, so that's really not a solution either. So when you look at where these offenses occur, and this is from a study that was a national study, it just so happened that it was done by the University of New Hampshire, where I am. There's a large research lab called the Crimes Against Children Research Center. They do some of the most cutting-edge research in this field. They did a study called the Juvenile Online Victimization Incident Study, JOVIS. This was it. And, of course, while most of the computers, the kids were solicited online, it was located at their home. What we're seeing is that trend is changing significantly. We also do some interesting things in these studies. We'll take the parents and their children, put them in separate rooms, ask them the same questions. We get very different answers. So we'll ask the parents, well, you know, what do you do in terms of internet safety? Well, I have a program that I've loaded, NetNanny, something like that. I've password protected it. We monitor the activities of our child. We know exactly where they're going. We look at the internet history. We look at those temporary files. We see what our kids are doing online. And we have a pretty good handle on it. And then you talk to their kids in the next room, and they say, well, I know the master password. I disable NetNanny. I go out online all the time. I have more than one screen name. I have more than one internet account. My parents think I use AOL, but really I've got a Hotmail account. That's the one I use when I don't want them to know what I'm doing. I go into the temporary internet history. I delete the files because I know they check those. When you think about how computer savvy kids are compared to their parents, I know that for quite a long time, my wife was constantly asking our daughters, how do I do this on the internet? Come help. She was always yelling to them to come help or do something. So they're learning at a very young age, and they share that information. I can assure you that within these hallways, on probably a daily basis, kids are passing out website addresses. Hey, have you gone here yet? Have you tried this program? It's free. You can download it. Here's the website. So they're always trading information about what's cool, what's new. And, of course, you've got to understand, does anybody here think that a kid isn't going to go to a sexually explicit website? It's like asking me if I ever looked at Playboy magazine when I was 13 years old. Of course they are. You have to accept the reality that with 280,000 sites, all of which are going to give you an opportunity to view some material for free before they ask for a credit card, kids are going to go there. They're naturally curious. And consequently, when they do go there, they get into situations where they start to, they call it mouse traps. Once you open that web address, it creates a cookie, and then you can't get out of it. And so their natural inclination is to shut off their computer. But that information still resides there. And so they often will talk to us in these focus groups about the fact that, oh yeah, I went there and I kind of got material out there. And so they'll talk about it. It's funny to them. They're curious about it. But then that causes them to perhaps go over into an area where they're not really exercising the best judgment. You've got to recognize that 12, 13, 14, 15, that's the high-risk population for us. So we see kids get into the most trouble. They're not really thinking it through. And so, anyway, what we try to talk to kids about is, you don't know who you're dealing with here. People will obviously try to deceive you about what their true intentions are. And, when people think that blocking software, programs like NetNanny, are the solution, I can tell you our very first case involving a child who was sexually assaulted by an offender happened in a Boston Bruins chat room. Now, no internet safety program is going to red flag that. There was nothing sexually oriented going on in that room. But this boy went into that room and simply said, boy, I love the Red Sox, but I can't get my dad to take me to a game. That is all it takes. Sex offenders, these are crimes of opportunity. They are looking for kids who are starved for time, love, attention, and affection. That was the same before there were computers as it is today. They're looking for that vulnerable child who has a need that they can fulfill. And they will spend an inordinate amount of time fulfilling that need. They will communicate with that child for hours online, not initially asking them to have sex, but listening to their problems and trying to relate to their issues. So if you're someone who, obviously we're all very busy, you know, working parents, single parents, things of that nature, and your child is sitting out there and maybe they're going through a tough time at school, maybe their peer groups rejected them, their best friend has done something mean to them, their parents are getting a divorce, they're going to have to move and they don't want to. And so they go online and they talk to somebody who's willing to listen. Now that offender is going to try to be their best friend. We've actually done a study of 2,500 cases where children were lured over the internet and met somebody that was a stranger to them. And in over half of those situations, those kids voluntarily left home knowing that they were going to meet somebody for the purposes of sex. But that situation evolved over time. It often took as much as 3 months of constant communication between these two individuals, and it progressed from online communication to then telephone calls between one another, and then a situation where they agreed to meet. Oftentimes when we arrest these offenders, the victims reluctantly tell us the story, not only because they're embarrassed about their own conduct, but because they tell us they're in love with this offender. They're 13, he's 45. But they're in love with him because he fulfilled that emotional need that they have. So a kid putting it in your computer in the living room is going to protect your kid. That is not the answer. Having a conversation with your child about the fact that you know they're going to go to these sexually explicit websites, you know that their natural curiosity is going to cause them to probably become involved in conversations in chat rooms. But let's talk about the dangers of that. Let's talk about some of the cases like I'm going to show you where these kids ended up being sexually assaulted, murdered. There was recently a case where a girl met an offender through a MySpace account. Her body was just found in New York State. She was an honor student. She was a great athlete. She was somebody that everybody thought was one of probably the top 10 kids in her high school. What they didn't know was that she was really hurting inside, and she was looking for somebody to be able to talk to, and unfortunately the person she found was a prior convicted sex offender who had a violent past. When he finally met her, and what we talked to the kids about is these people don't want to be your friend. These people aren't in love with you. They have one intention, and that is to sexually exploit you. They're trying to move from an online dialogue to a face-to-face meeting for one purpose. And once they get what they want, they're going to move on and find another child. So they are not the answer. They have to feel comfortable talking to you as their parent about what their concerns are, about what is going on in their life, so they don't have a need to turn to somebody else. And that's really the only way you're going to become a part of the solution. Because if you rely on the police, or the schools, or internet blocking software to do that parenting job, it's not going to happen. These kids are very vulnerable. So this is what they look for: emotional instability, kids who are upset, depressed. They look for that opportunity to work their way into your child's life. And of course, here's the problem. Kids are perfect victims in the sense that oftentimes they're very embarrassed about their own conduct. They're not going to disclose their abuse. Only 1 in 10 child abuse victims in this country disclose their victimization in their lifetime. And there's a reason for that. They live with that guilt, that embarrassment, because in their mind, and these offenders exploit this, somehow it's their fault. I'm going to show you an example, really unbelievable example, of how an offender manipulated a child into being silent. And so, now with computers, they can actually, if they have an interest in a child, they can actually set up a program where they know whenever that child signs off. Oh, you're online. Hey, I'm going to talk to you. I mean, when we find offenders in these situations, oftentimes they think they're chatting with a child and it's really a police officer. And when we go into these homes, and some of them aren't too nice places, these offenders sit in front of a computer hour after hour after hour. It's so bad, we've got pictures that we use in some of our training programs of offenders who don't even want to get up and use the bathroom. They actually have a bucket next to their computer. They urinate. And, you know, what we find next to these computers are these materials, evidence collection procedures. These people often sit in front of their computers nude, fantasize, spend an inordinate amount of time just talking to kids who fit their profile. We'll talk about that too. And even though that kind of person sounds like, or looks like this guy in your mind, we're arresting a lot of people who are come from good merit, have good marriages, great jobs, very involved in their community, public figures, people who are very successful outwardly, but have a desire to exploit children. And so for us, we've arrested, I can't tell you how many police officers. We just had a district attorney commit suicide in Texas a few weeks ago, who we arrested, or he knew he was going to be arrested, and before the police got into his house, they were knocking on his door, he shot himself. We've arrested Microsoft executives, priests, you name it. And so, you know, it could be your next door neighbor, it could be somebody you would never suspect could do something like this. So, as I mentioned, in these national studies like this one of over 2,500 cases, here are some of the characteristics about these offenders. Many of them that we arrest had no prior history of sexual offenses. You know, a lot of people get concerned about, all right, I want to go to a website, I want to figure out where these convicted sex offenders are in my community. That's an important thing to do, and those people do constitute a threat. But if you're thinking that they're the only ones engaged in this kind of behavior, it's not the case. We arrest a lot of people who never had any criminal history at all. And when we look at the, I'm sorry, I can't see that very well, but the age of these offenders, the largest age range goes from 25 to 45 years old, I believe that is. And the alarming thing is, even though you can't see this, the red and the yellow bars are kids under 6 years old. A lot of the kids in these child pornography images are getting younger and younger. That's a trend we're noticing. Why do you think that is? They're nonverbal. They can't testify against it. They don't even know what's happening to them. And so what we're also finding is that a lot of these victims are being photographed, not by total strangers, but the vast majority of them, it's a family member, a relative, somebody that's in and around them on a regular basis. We're also finding that, of course, when you look at how many kids these offenders molest, it's obviously way higher than what they admit to. A large study was done of people that are convicted offenders in prisons. And to get through a sexual offender treatment program, they had to admit to their actual level of victimization. The average, prior to going to jail, they were admitting to less than one victim. I mean, obviously, some people said they didn't molest anybody, they were not guilty of anything. And the ones that did always say, well, it was only one. Just like, you know, when your kid gets caught with their hand in the cookie jar, you know, how many cookies did you eat? Well, it's always only one. Just like everybody rest of reality, on average, they're molesting 26 children per offender. And here's another alarming area. It's called file sharing programs. Any of you remember Napster, the big Napster controversy when people were sharing music? A lot of people, you know, thought, oh, that's no big deal. You know, so what if I download some free songs and don't pay for them. You know, is the FBI really going to come after me for copyright infringement? But offenders figured out, well, we can use the same technology to share videos and photographs of children being molested. And so there are a number of them out there now. BearShare is one of them. LimeWire is another one. Kazaa is one of the bigger ones. And what happens is these companies create these sites out of the United States. They base them in Australia or some other country in the Far East. And they're places where they build huge, massive computer systems. And those, they call them super nodes. And if you can imagine a situation where if there's this big computer system up here and I'm a user down here, I just am a person at home with my computer, I go up to this super node and I ask it, you know, do you have this Beatles song? Or do you have this Pirates of the Caribbean movie? And if they do have it, it's actually not stored on that computer. What's happening is it is telling you, well, you know, I don't have it, but this other person over here has it. Because when you go into these systems, you're not only being asked what you want, but you're being asked what you're willing to share. And once you tell it what you're willing to share, all those files are notated up in this super node. So now what's happening is the computer is hooking you up to another user. And that direct connection is where the file transfer takes place. So offenders figured out, you know what? The police are looking at the traffic on AOL and MSN and Yahoo. They're watching what we're doing in these chat rooms. They're watching what files we're trading through these internet service providers. So let's cut the internet service provider out. Let's use these programs, and then we can find out who's got these pictures of little children being raped and who's willing to share them. Well, one of the most alarming things for us right now is that we've identified over 3 million computers in this country alone that are actively trading child pornography. 3 million. There are huge investigations going on right now in every state, including yours, of people who are trading pornography through peer-to-peer file sharing programs. And we're knocking on their doors and arresting them on really a daily basis. Let me just give you some idea of what I'm talking about here.
The House tonight passed a bill banning virtual child pornography, fake digital images that appear to show children involved in sex acts. Supporters hope it will pass muster at the Supreme Court, which struck down an earlier law ruling that it was too broad. Meanwhile, those who peddle real child porn on the internet are doing so with ease. What is it being done to stop it? At police headquarters in Dallas, Texas, Lieutenant Bill Walsh and his team of detectives work the most sordid beat there is. Look at just the titles, Bambina Collection, Real Child Porn, Illegal Preteen Underage Lolita. And recently, they've noticed an explosion in child pornography on the internet. It is easier to get now than ever before. Now, people who can molest a child, videotape that child, upload it to the internet, and someone halfway across the world can watch that video the same day. Remember the Napster controversy? Using the same basic techniques used to swap bootleg music files, free exchanges known as peer-to-peer, collectors of child pornography have now developed a simple and anonymous way to share files. They don't have to put a credit card down. They don't even have to know who they're getting this file from or who they're uploading this file to. A person searching for child pornography goes to a peer-to-peer index to see what files can be found on other people's computers. Then these images are downloaded directly. No middleman.
He's got a dog collar on her head with spikes on it.
One of the undercover Dallas detectives showed us the kind of pornographic material so easily shared with peer-to-peer technology.
This girl is actually crying so hard, and he's documenting this on his digital camera. She's crying so hard her eyes are swollen shut.
The computer has changed not only the ease of accessing child pornography, but the fundamental nature of the violation. Once it hits the net, a single image of a single assault will be in cyberspace forever. In a way,
child will be assaulted over and over and over each time the image is downloaded for the rest of his or her life.
Once this is out on the internet, it's out there forever.
I think that's an important point, because kids who, you know, have a lapse in judgment, and that happens a lot. I have to say, one of the worst things I think you can have in your home is a webcam. Unless, you know, you've got some loved one overseas, in the military, whatever, and you want to communicate with them periodically, I would rip that webcam out of your house. Because you are going to have a situation, in many cases, where the offender is going to ask to see, they want to see what this child looks like. And you'll ask them to turn on that webcam. And kids will communicate with one another, and they'll do things through these webcams. Well, there are programs now that are very inexpensive that act like a video camera on your computer. I can open up a program right now called Camtasia on my computer, and every single thing I do is recorded. Every keystroke, every website I go to, anything that's on that screen is recorded internally on that software program, and I can play it back. I can also edit it and send it to anyone I want. Well, I can't tell you how many kids come into a task force with their parents every day and say, you know what? You know, I probably shouldn't have done that, but I did it. It was on a webcam, and now I'm not sure if it's out there on the internet somewhere. Can you check to see if it's out there? And more importantly, can you get it back? We can't ever get it back. Once it's out there in people's hard drives and it's traded, we took one offender online. And just as a test, we were able to do some of these things. We got wind of that 5 days after it happened, and we found that image was in over 18 different countries 5 days later, being viewed and traded hundreds of thousands of times. So once you make that decision, or you don't use, you know, you're really not making a good decision, it's forever. So we talk to kids about that because, you know, a lot of times what they'll say to us is, and this is what we tell our school resource officers and our teachers, to have these kinds of conversations with kids, because I don't think it's great to just show slides. I think it's good to sit in a group, in a setting with kids, in a circle, and start talking about things like this. Well, what would you worry about? And this is what kids tell us. Well, I'd be worried that someday when I want to get a job, my employer might find out about that. Or someday when I, you know, fall in love with somebody, my spouse, you know, what am I going to tell them before we get married? Or, you know, what happens when I'm older and I have kids? Are they going to find out about that later? So there's a lot of things that they worry about, and they carry that burden with them throughout their entire lifetime that they don't think about at the moment that they're doing it. So that's why we want to have these conversations with kids in middle school and high school before they take that step. We also talk to kids about the fact that, and this was just outlawed this year, in 2006, there was a bill passed called the Adam Walsh Child Protection Act, and it banned this kind of situation in the U.S. This is a German website, and basically what they do is they misspell the word of sites that kids frequent, like PlayStation. If you type in an M instead of an N, it's going to take you to an adult porn site. There was a website, they've actually taken it down now, but for quite some time, a lot of kids, when they were doing homework about the White House, didn't realize that you had to type in whitehouse.gov. If you type in whitehouse.com, it took you to an adult porn website. So a lot of kids, you know, mistakenly end up in these places. And then you've got people like this who rationalize their behavior. That's the other thing the internet has done. that I think has caused more people to offend now than ever before. Pre-computer, I think a lot of people, you know, had certain fetishes, they had certain predilections around what they might want to do, but they were always afraid to act upon it. The computer has given them not only a tool to access children, but the ability to look at the kind of material that interests them endlessly. Just so much of it out there. They can fuel that fetish by continually watching it. And the other thing that happens is they find people who are like-minded. They find people who help them rationalize their behavior and minimize what they're doing. And one of those groups is this one, the North American Man Boy, or else it's too late. And there are international groups like this as well. And, you know, their vision here is it. What they look for is a day where boy lovers all over the world can come together in solidarity. And they feel that the rest of us are wrong. What you'll see at their sites are these blogs, these conversations that go on about the fact that, don't worry, this is like homosexuality was 30 years ago. It wasn't accepted then, but it is now. And someday what we do will be accepted. So believe it or not, there are people out there who think that, you know, this is okay, and then they communicate with one another about the fact that it's no big deal. So how prevalent is this? Latest study, 1 in 7 children, 1 in 7 in the entire nation, received unwanted online requests to engage in sexual activity. So it's happening everywhere. Nobody's really immune from it. That's why I think it's so important that you don't shy away from the issue, but you, you know, really address it with your kids. Most of the victims being solicited online are female, but about 25% on average are male. And as I said, the most vulnerable age is 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, 15 years old. Those are where we're seeing the biggest problems. Here's an example I wanted to share with you. This just blew me away. This came from an actual case. We had a sex offender draw this cartoon. We didn't have to do it. We collected his evidence. He actually drew this cartoon for his daughter in an effort to get her to be quiet. And what he said in it is this. First of all, he tried to let her know, you know, how much he enjoys being with her and how sad it would be if he was made to stop. And then he says, you know, these aren't bad experiences. That's that whole rationalization, minimization behavior. Everyone has them. It's not just you and me. There are a lot of people doing this. It's no big deal. He continues on. He says, you know, and we see this a lot in child molestation cases. If you ever said anything, you know, we were both wrong. We were both doing things that are wrong. So we would both get in trouble. And, you know, you wouldn't want to get in trouble. And, of course, being the source of all the income in this house, being the person that, you know, really holds things together, as the father in this situation, I hear this all the time from victims, you know, you wouldn't want me to get in trouble because then how would you survive? Where would you go? What would you do? And then he also blames the victim. Well, you know, you initiated some of this activity, and that does happen in these cases. And so, you know, a lot of it is really your fault, too. And then, you know, he goes on to say, but, you know, we're not evil. It's just other people don't understand. It's okay what we're doing. And, you know, it's better that we're doing this, you're doing this with me, because, you know, you can trust me as opposed to some stranger out there. And finally, he ends it with this cartoon. Remember, I love you and always want you to feel terrific. This is how offenders manipulate victims. Not only manipulate them into becoming engaged in this behavior, but into buying their silence. And as I said earlier, what we're also finding alarmingly is a lot of kids who are engaging in illegal behavior. I don't know how many of you remember last summer there was a lot of hearings in Congress. You know, this kid was on Oprah, a whole bunch of other shows. His name was Justin Barry. He was somebody that they did a New York Times expose on, who was actually soliciting offenders or people. It was a form of online prostitution. And we're seeing more and more of this where kids are saying, you know what, you can use different programs, eBay and others, where you can send me a gift, or you can send me money through PayPal and other programs like that. And if you send me something, then I'll do something for you on my webcam. Or in some circumstances, I'll actually meet you and engage in sex with you as a juvenile. So we see that kind of behavior. We see a lot of kids sharing child pornography online, unfortunately. So many of them are getting arrested, just like the adults are. Earlier, too, when I talked about the webcam, here's another thing that we're seeing that's really alarming, and that is a form of extortion. Here's a young girl who was chatting with a person online. She thought she could trust them. They've been chatting with one another, you know, on a regular basis. And he convinces her to unbutton her blouse and show him her breasts. What she doesn't realize is that he's recording this session. And so a few minutes later, he takes all of these images of her. And of course, because he's been chatting with her for a long time, he knows who her parents are. He knows a lot of information about her. And he says, you know what? If you don't also show me some other parts of your body, I'm going to send these pictures of you exposing your breasts to your parents, to your friends. So she got scared and shut down her computer. That report came to us. We did an investigation. We found this guy. He actually lived in California. We have four task forces in California. They went out and arrested him. He was a convicted sex offender on probation, out of prison. And we had found he had done this with 16 other girls. And many of them, almost all of them, in fact, had done what he told them out of fear and never told anybody. And we found the kids, you know, it was very difficult for them because they had to disclose to their parents that, geez, yeah, this did happen. That is me in that picture. Well, of course, once again, this offender didn't just use them to bribe these kids. He was also trading them with his friends, other sex offenders, all around the country. So now these pictures of all of these girls are everywhere on the internet. Something kids are doing that's very disturbing is cyberbullying. There are a lot of schools that have very strict rules now around this kind of conduct in a school setting. I don't know if this school system has the same thing, but many kids are getting expelled, suspended, arrested. So you might, in the old days, write somebody's, you know, name for a good time, call this number. And it was a form of harassment. Well, people are doing the same thing now on the internet. And I'll tell you, some of the meanest kids can be girls. Because when they decide all of a sudden they don't like somebody, we see a lot of these cases where they create a website, which is easy to do, it's free. Many programs allow you to have multiple websites. They can do it in the social networking sites like MySpace and Facebook and Zanga. And then they pass slips of paper around. And in one instance, they were talking about this girl. Let me, I think I have her right here. This was on a MySpace account. Now, when they created it, they led everybody to believe it was this girl's account that they didn't like, even though it was not. They put it up there for her. They had a picture of her. They put her picture up there. They put this up here. Hi, my name is. They used her actual name. You know, here's my cell phone number, which they had. Please call me, because I like it when guys stalk me. I like it when they call me over and over again asking for sex, talk dirty to me. And so, of course, she started getting these phone calls and wondering, you know, what happened. In Vermont, a bunch of kids thought it would be funny to take a kid who was regarded as a kind of a geek, we put up a website and we told him that the most beautiful girl in the school was in love with him, just didn't know how to tell him. So they led this kid on to a series of conversations about how much they were, this girl was in love with him. And in the end, one of his friends said, hey, listen, go to this website because they're posting all of these conversations you're having back and forth with this girl, along with a lot of commentary about how funny this is that she really doesn't like you at all. They've all just been doing this at your expense. He went home and hung himself. So we talked to kids about the fact that, you know, what do you think those girls feel like now? Carrying that through the rest of their life, knowing that something they thought was funny really caused someone to go home and kill themselves. So, obviously, social networking sites are a big concern. I just want to show you, that clip isn't working well this way. I just want to show you another video clip here.
Are your kids flirting with danger? Or they just may be if they use a website called MySpace.com. Across the country, there have been a number of crimes linked to the site, including sexual assaults, even possible connections to murder cases. And it all starts with a kid and a computer.
MySpace is a lot of fun. So many people use it.
It's really cool. A lot of people would say MySpace is like my life.
MySpace.com, a hot internet site that has teenagers flocking. But they're not the only ones signing on. Behind some screen names hide predators of the worst kind. Child predators.
These predators are online, and they know how to use these sites. People aren't always who they say they are on the internet. You can put anything on there and pretend to be someone.
Take Dan, who enjoys poetry and flowers. His real name is Keith D. Wilkins, a 32-year-old convicted sex offender from Phoenix, Arizona. Lieutenant David Pfeiffer heads up Pennsylvania's Internet Task Force in Delaware County. He says the danger often lies in a teen's innocence.
Children think that the more time they're talking to someone online, the more trust they gain.
Members only need to be 14 and 16 for their webpage to be viewed by strangers. But plenty of kids give false ages, like this 14-year-old boy who claimed to be 19.
Why'd you do that? When I looked for ages, it didn't have what I really was.
MySpace.com allows members to create their own website. Some teens post risque photos, choosing screen names too offensive to show you.
What do you feel this is for predators? Is this like a kid in a candy store kind of thing?
Open door. It's a target-rich environment, and there's more kids than they can exploit, so.
Analyst Brian Hunt says many kids on MySpace.com post way too much information, unwittingly putting themselves at risk.
How quickly can somebody gather information on a kid?
I've done it in less than 2 minutes. They put their real name, their real date of birth, they put in their, in some cases, their home phone number, so you're going from a screen name in a matter of minutes to the front door.
To see just how easy it is, we signed on to MySpace.com, and with just a little searching, we found a local girl who claimed to be 17. Based on what she had in her profile, we learned her name, what town she lived in, where she went to school, and where she worked. Like that. With just a little research, we were at her front door. Emily Silly with CBS 3, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. We're doing a story about MySpace.com. We tracked you down through that.
Through MySpace?
Through your daughter's website. Her parents were astonished.
Oh, it's scary, you know? It's my little girl. And
no, this is not good.
We showed them her online pictures.
What is that?
Personal data she posted.
Some of this isn't even true. She's not 17.
Yeah, did you realize that this was what she had posted?
No. Mm-mm. Too much information.
How do you feel about the fact that we were able to very easily track you down?
Unacceptable. It's scary. That's scary. I mean, if you can do it, anybody can do it.
From what you had on your website, with their permission, we confronted their daughter as she left work.
Where you lived, your parents' home phone number.
I explained how easy she was to find.
It's really, really scary. Mm-hmm. Like, just to think that people can get a hold of me.
Did you ever think about, like, the kind of information that you were putting on there?
Not really, no.
I would urge parents to learn as much as they can about MySpace, how to go on, how to check their kids' sites.
For families like this one, our unexpected visit proved a welcome one. A valuable lesson learned.
What do you think you're going to do with your MySpace website now?
Delete it?
Like, never again? Ever?
Are you
thank you before somebody else did. And you notice we didn't identify the family. That was to respectfully protect their privacy. As far as MySpace.com goes, we tried multiple times to get a response but got no reply. On the website, MySpace says it monitors for inappropriate content and underage users. It also offers advice to kids and parents on how to stay safe online. You can also find that information and more on our website, cbs3.com. Just click on special reports and then links. And one of the most important things to remember is that parents have to get computer savvy. They have to watch what their kids are doing online.
You know, I'm on.
Let me jump to this a little bit about an iPod.
Video, iPods, and other types of portable digital media players can be used to view everything from football to music. Now, in the case of 38-year-old Ron James Guzman, apparently even child pornography. Mr. Guzman was originally brought to our attention through a cyber tip. David Boatwright is the chief of the Criminal Investigations Division at the Texas Attorney General's Office. He tells KXAN the Center for Missing and Exploiting Children tipped off the AG's office.
The National Center had received a cyber tip from a national internet service provider that on his internet service account that provider detected child pornography, and they're required by federal law to report that to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and they did that in this case.
Fulbright says when the AG's office began its investigation in April of last year, Guzman was living in these apartments in San Marcos. When Guzman was arrested last month, investigators confiscated desktop computers, laptops, and external drives found in his home, in addition to the iPod. But Boatwright says, regardless of what's found on Guzman's computers, Wednesday's indictments pertain strictly to the video and still pictures found on Guzman's iPod.
I know I'm getting to the end of the hour, too, and I just want to mention that for those of you whose kids have online gaming, Xbox, PlayStation, Wii, if they're connected to the internet, which of course is a very popular thing, and also with obviously your computer where people are doing online gaming, there are a lot of offenders now who are targeting kids in those game rooms. They're realizing that, hey, this is the age range of kids that I'm interested in that typically play these games. So I'm going to go in and act like a kid. I'm going to get very proficient in this game. You know, I'm going to pose as a child, and I'm going to communicate with someone and see if I can get some, you know, some dialogue going. And then they have the ability to invite these kids into a one-on-one chat. So now I'll break you out of that whole group. Unless you and I just talked for a while about the game, about your life, about the things that you're interested in. Let me just end my part with a quick review of a type of the kind of case that we're talking about here with offenders. This is one where, you know, parents thinking, you know, my young daughter's a child model. I'm going to obviously put information about that child in a modeling website. And in this situation, this offender was attempting to contact this young girl, and his screen name was Big Daddy Isaac, Comcast.net. So that got reported to us. We became interested in this individual, and so we started to do searches on Big Daddy Isaac. We have a lot of tools that we use that aren't available to the general public, and we learned that he had also posted this at another site. He revealed that his age was 29, which is a lie, he's older than that, that he lives in Oregon. So that really what our job is a lot of times is to figure out where is this person in the world, and then what state, and then what city, and so on. And he says, in here, that I'm a boy, basically. So we started doing more searches, and we found he also had another screen name. This one was Tattooed Freak. 1975, here he says he's 30, but in this we found that he said he was in Eugene, Oregon. So that narrowed our search even more. He talks about the fact that this, you know, it was just ironic later on that One of his philosophies was, when you die, it doesn't matter how many toys you have, how much money you've made, but that you are important in the life of this child. So this is Big Daddy Isaac, once we found it. And we did that through a number of different search engines. He had posted that picture at another website, so we found that. And then we found his actual address. And what alarmed us was he said he worked for the Eugene School District. And so this is him in real life. He posted a picture of himself when he was younger. And what we found when we went to his house, or our task force went to his house, tens of thousands of images of child pornography. He admitted to more young girls and filming those rapes and distributing it on the internet. He was a librarian and a school bus driver. So he has been incarcerated for 15 years. But this is what was alarming. This is one of the things that, you know, a lot of people think that the Dateline show was just on last night. Chris Hansen. I'm surprised nobody's shot Chris Hansen yet, because we arrest these offenders with weapons on them all the time. We've already had, unfortunately, one task force member killed, certain search warrant. And so these people can be very dangerous and very violent. This guy, you know, had bumper stickers in his car like this: "What a child learns at home will remain forever." He actually had a magnet on his refrigerator about preventing child abuse. This was what was really interesting about Big Daddy Isaac, was this tattoo. When we photographed it and asked him what it was about, I don't know if you can see it, but up here is a baby in a cage, and down here is a baby being clutched in the arms of a demon. And when we asked him to explain this, this demon is actually tattooing this baby. And he told us that he put that on his arm to remind him that every time he molests a child, he's scarring them for life, just like a tattoo. And when we asked him what that baby represented in the cage up there, he said, "That's my next victim." Just to give you some idea of how dangerous these people can be. So, I really want to save time, because you know we wanted to have that panel discussion as well. So certainly, I'm not sure what the next thing is. If somebody here wants to talk, or people just get asked questions, open to any of it.
Brad, thank you very much. At this point, we're going to ask the panel members to come up onto the stage. Some of them have.